Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of January 5th, 2004. This week, we present the first of a two-part series counting down Auntie Bee's Knees' top picks for the top 10 worst corporations of 2003. Number 10 is McDonald's. The first McDonald's restaurant was founded in 1940 by brothers Dick and Mac McDonald. In 1955, entrepreneur Ray Kroc took over the company, forming McDonald's Corporation in 1960. Today, McDonald's is the world's largest chain of fast food restaurants with more than 30,000 outlets and 1.5 million employees around the world. McDonald's revenues for 2002 were more than $15 billion, with net profits of nearly $1 billion, but not all is rosy underneath the golden arches. Last year, the chain posted its first quarterly loss. According to Technomic, a U.S.-based market research firm, McDonald's share of the fast food market has fallen 3% over the last 5 years to settle at 15.2%. McDonald's spends almost $2 billion on advertising each year to cultivate its image of being a fun, family-oriented restaurant. But behind Ronald McDonald's smiling face lies an ugly reality. McDonald's only interest is increasing profits. Most McDonald's workers earn minimum wage. Pressure to keep profits high and wage costs low results in understaffing so that staff have to work harder and faster. Not surprisingly, staff turnover at McDonald's is high, making it virtually impossible to unionize and fight for a better deal. McDonald's franchise owners are similarly overworked and underpaid. In addition to franchise fees, supplies, and a percentage of sales, McDonald's collects rent from its franchise owners. As a condition of the franchise agreement, McDonald's owns the property on which most of its franchises are located and extracts income from franchise owners in the form of rents partially linked to sales. This makes McDonald's not only the biggest fast food retailer in the world, but also one of the world's biggest slumlords. McDonald's promotes its food as nutritious, even though it is high in fat, sugar, and salt, and low in fiber and vitamins, the same dietary characteristics that are linked to heart disease, cancer, and diabetes, all leading causes of death in North America. McDonald's is also the world's largest single user of beef. Nearly one out of every 10 cattle raised for slaughter in the United States is raised for McDonald's. The company obtains its beef from the same factory-style farming operations that are responsible for pollution, greenhouse gas emissions, and the destruction of habitat in North America and around the world. While the company has been quick to assert that there's no link to mad cow disease in its supply chain, the factory-style farming methods employed by McDonald's suppliers pose a risk to consumers not just in terms of food poisoning and related illnesses, but through the consumption of chemicals and antibiotics that are fed to McDonald's livestock to prevent such diseases. Lastly, McDonald's holds the dubious honor of being party to the longest civil trial in British history. In 1990, McDonald's served libel writs on 5 volunteer activists with Greenpeace London for distributing a leaflet entitled, "What's Wrong with McDonald's?" The company took Helen Steele and David Morris to court. In June 1997, the judge delivered a verdict, ruling that McDonald's exploits children with misleading advertising, is culpably responsible for cruelty to animals, pays workers low wages, and is anti-union. But because Steele and Morris failed to prove all of the points in their anti-McDonald's leaflet, they were ordered to pay McDonald's £60,000 in damages. The activists have refused, and McDonald's has not tried to collect, but the case remains on appeal to the European Court of Human Rights. Number 9 in the top 10 worst corporations of 2003 is Walmart. Sam Walton opened the first Walmart store in Rogers, Arkansas in 1962. Today, his children are 5 of the richest people in the world, and Walmart Stores Incorporated is the planet's largest retailer. In 2001, Walmart had $247 billion in sales and made $8 billion in profit. These profits go directly into the pockets of the Walton family, as the company remains privately held. Walmart employs more than 2.5 million people at thousands of stores in 10 countries. Most of these workers are paid low wages, and the company is notoriously anti-union. Sam Walton once argued that his company should be exempt from paying the minimum wage. Last year, Walmart stores in several U.S. states were raided after government officials found that the companies contracted to clean Walmart stores were employing illegal immigrants, some of whom worked for $2 a day. Walmart's anti-union stance was also a driving force behind grocery chain strikes across the U.S. last summer. Unionized grocery workers at Kroger's and Vons make almost $4 an hour more than workers at Walmart. Management at the grocery chains argue that they cannot continue to provide health care coverage and premium wages for their workers while remaining competitive to the Walton family empire. Walmart was rated one of the five worst companies for employee privacy by Wired magazine last year. The company uses drug tests and multiple-choice personality quizzes to screen potential workers, who then spend most of their working hours under the lens of surveillance cameras. According to the Institute for Women's Policy Research, Walmart ranks last among retailers in terms of equity and fairness for women. The company has also earned consistently low scores on the Corporate Equality Index, a tool to measure how equitably companies are treating gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender employees, consumers, and investors. Walmart was named Sweatshop Retailer of the Year for the second year in a row in 2003, according to a survey by the Maquila Solidarity Network. Though Walmart has the ability, as the world's largest retailer, to set higher standards for labor and production within the industry, the company pressures its suppliers to provide goods cheaper and more quickly, encouraging sweatshop abuses. Number 8 on the top 10 worst corporations of 2003 is Inco. More than a century old, Inco is Canada's leading nickel manufacturer and one of the largest mining companies in the world, with over 10,000 employees and more than $8.5 billion worth of assets. Though the company proclaims its goal to be the world's most profitable nickel producer, Inco posted more than $8 million in losses last year. Inco is by far the worst mining polluter in Canada. According to Environmental Defence Canada, the amount of pollution from Inco's mining facilities is more than double that of Canada's second largest mining polluter. Inco produces less than three times as much nickel as its competitor Falconbridge, but more than 13 times the pollution. In 2001, Inco released nearly 705,000 kilograms of toxic heavy metals into the atmosphere and land surrounding three of its Canadian facilities. Most of this pollution came from Inco's Central Mills facility in Copper Cliff, Ontario, near Sudbury. Port Colborne, Ontario, is one of Canada's most contaminated regions due to the high levels of pollution emitted by an Inco nickel refinery operating there from 1918 to 1984. Though Inco has claimed responsibility for the nickel, copper, cobalt, and arsenic contamination in Port Colborne, the company continues to stall cleanup efforts while local families are daily exposed to cancer-causing pollutants. Last September, the Ontario Environmental Review Tribunal confirmed a Ministry of the Environment order against Inco, demanding that the company clean up 25 contaminated sites in Port Colborne. The order had initially been issued in March of 2002, but Inco appealed on the basis that the order was overly protective of human health. If Inco seems to operate without regard for the environment, it doesn't appear to care much more for its employees. Last May, the company was charged with violations of the Ontario Occupational Health and Safety Act after Brian Lachlan, a veteran employee at Inco's Copper Cliff refinery, died from lung failure about 6 days after being ordered to drain a series of tanks containing toxic nickel carbonyl. The company has also had ongoing labor disputes with unionized workers at its refineries. Most recently, members of Local 6500 set up picket lines at Inco's 12 Sudbury plants last June after walking away from the bargaining table in frustration over what they call a lack of progress on key issues, namely pensions, wages, and vacation time. While Inco fails to keep house, the company is nonetheless embarking on the largest corporate expansion in its history, pursuing development of two of the world's biggest nickel deposits in the French territory of New Caledonia and on unceded native land in Atlantic Canada's Voisey's Bay. Number 7 is Citigroup. Citigroup is the world's second largest financial services firm and the largest U.S. bank with $1 trillion worth of assets. Last year, Citigroup was forced to dump stock researchers and to separate research from its investment banking unit after agreeing to pay $400 million to settle U.S. regulators' charges that the bank misled investors with biased recommendations to win increased banking fees. Now under investigation for its handling of mutual funds, Citigroup continues a long tradition of chiseling the middle and working class customer to fund high-blown extortion and money laundering schemes. Name a financial scandal pretty much anywhere in the world, and chances are that Citigroup is somehow involved in the shady dealings, either as an investor, advisor, or money launderer. One of the company's subsidiaries is brokerage firm Solomon Smith Barney, which has been plagued with lawsuits and government investigations stemming from its financing of Enron and WorldCom. Most recently, Citigroup is among the financial institutions being investigated in Italy's Parmalat scandal. According to analysts, Citigroup arranged a structured finance transaction that helped to disguise the level of Parmalat's debt. Last May, Ireland's largest bank, Allfirst Financial, sued Citibank, accusing the company of helping currency trader John Rusnak to hide nearly $700 million in losses from his employers at Allfirst. The lawsuit claims that Citibank supported Risnak's scheme by opening prime brokerage accounts for him and then helping him to hide ever-growing losses from Allfirst. U.S. federal investigators have found that Citigroup's predecessor, Citicorp, allowed the laundering of more than $350 million by families of foreign leaders being investigated for corruption throughout the 1990s. In 1999 and again in 2001, U.S. government officials cited six instances between 1992 and 2000 in which Citicorp had ignored basic due diligence requirements in dealing with suspected money launderers. Federal investigators allege that Citicorp either allowed or assisted in money laundering by the Juarez Drug Cartel, Mexico's largest drug trafficking network, and by people and companies that had paid bribes. All of this money laundering went on under the nose of then-chairman and CEO John Reed, who now happens to be interim chair of the New York Stock Exchange. Reed retired from Citigroup in April 2000, ceding control to co-CEO Sanford Weill, who was forced to step down last year after allegations stemming from the Enron scandal. Not surprisingly, Citigroup has joined the growing backlash by corporate America against corporate governance reforms. Tom Jones, head of Citigroup's global investment management business, has also made it clear that the bank is not interested in shareholder reform. According to Jones, quote, "I've got higher priorities. I'm not a do-gooder. I want to do what I get paid for, and shareholder activism isn't what I get paid for." Number six on the top 10 worst corporations of 2003 is GlaxoSmithKline. GlaxoSmithKline, or Glaxo for short, is one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world, with more than 100,000 employees operating in 150 countries. Glaxo was created when two multinational drug companies, Glaxo Wellcome and SmithKline-Beachem, merged in 2001. The company's profits before taxes totaled more than $7 billion each year. In 2002, sales topped $31 billion. Based in the UK, the company is responsible for 26% of all vaccines and 17% of antibiotics sold in the world. Glaxo spends hundreds of millions of dollars each year to advertise its products and to promote drug-friendly legislation through government lobbying. Despite these efforts, the company has come increasingly under fire for unethical business practices that overtly value corporate profit over human lives. Glaxo has been at the center of criticism for making profit by overcharging for AIDS drugs. Criticism has been spearheaded by organizations such as Oxfam and Medicines Sans Frontières, who say that Glaxo and other drug companies grossly overcharge for AIDS treatments in Africa, while simultaneously preventing poor countries from manufacturing less expensive, generic versions of patented medicines. A couple of years ago, Glaxo and other drug companies tried to sue the South African government for importing generic AIDS drugs. Under pressure from the public and from the UK government, Glaxo is now selling its AIDS drugs to 63 developing countries at a discount. Last month, the company announced that it will license up to three new South African companies to manufacture generic versions of its AIDS medicines and will allow the country to import drugs produced elsewhere. But according to the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, a nonprofit group that operates 16 AIDS clinics in the US and Africa, these measures don't go nearly far enough. Even at Glaxo's discount prices, its AIDS drugs cost $1,600 a year for most patients, far more than most people in the developing world can afford. The AIDS Healthcare Foundation has barred Glaxo sales representatives from marketing their drugs at their clinics and has filed three lawsuits against the company. Last July, Glaxo's request to dismiss one such lawsuit was denied by a court in California. The AIDS Healthcare Foundation is challenging patent rights for three of Glaxo's top-selling AIDS drugs. Seniors groups in the U.S. called for a boycott of Glaxo's over-the-counter products last year after the company refused to supply drugs to Canadian online pharmacies that distribute discount medications to Americans. Glaxo said the step was needed to protect patient safety, but low-income American seniors argued that the company was trying only to protect its profits by stemming the flow of cheap Canadian drugs to the U.S. Canada's Federal Competition Bureau is investigating the company to see whether the move violates trade laws by threatening Canadian wholesalers. Meanwhile, millions are not buying Aquafresh toothpaste, Contact C cold medication, or Nicorette chewing gum in protest against Glaxo's move. Glaxo was also fined for Medicaid fraud last year in the U.S. The ruling charged that Glaxo sold its medications Flonase, an allergy spray, and Paxil, an antidepressant, at deeply discounted prices to U.S. health management organizations, concealing and avoiding the obligation to pay additional rebates by relabeling the drugs under a fraud scheme known as Lick and Stick. New York and six other states have launched lawsuits against Glaxo for trying to bribe doctors and pharmacists into selling Glaxo drugs over competing products. And the U.S. Internal Revenue Service claims that Glaxo owes taxes on billions of dollars in drug sales. While the company chisels profits from the unethical sale and marketing of its various pharmaceutical goods, company executives seek to hand these profits wholesale to a handful of Glaxo's corporate leaders. Shareholders at Glaxo's annual general meeting last May were outraged to discover that the company planned to give a multi-million dollar pay package to CEO Jean-Pierre Garnier at a time when the company's stock had lost one-third of its value in a 12-month period. Shareholders voted against the pay package, and last month the company unveiled revised pay and rewards contracts for its executives. Lastly, Glaxo is the manufacturer of Paxil, an antidepressant currently under review in the UK and the object of countless lawsuits in the US. In North America, Glaxo has been accused of manipulating data in a report to the US Food and Drug Administration, covering up the risk of suicide and violent behavior among Paxil users. Overseas, UK health regulators have asked doctors to stop prescribing Paxil for patients under 18. Use of the drug by adults is also under review after a report by the British government's Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency found an increase in the rate of self-mutilation and suicidal behavior among Paxil users under the age of 18. Despite the fact that Glaxo's ongoing troubles are directly related to the company's pursuit of profits at the expense of the health and well-being of millions of people worldwide, Glaxo executives continue to frame the issues as an image problem. According to one Glaxo representative, quote, "If this company is guilty of anything, it's poor public relations." That's more than enough to earn Glaxo a spot in Anti-Bisnee's list of the top 10 worst corporations of 2003. And that's a wrap for this week's Business Report. Join us next week as we continue our countdown with Anti-Bisnee's picks for the top 5 worst corporations of 2003. Till then, this is Anti-Bisnee's reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.